Hello everybody, and welcome back inside the Shard Sign for the final time this season. Sale's 2021 campaign came to an end Saturday, with the Sharks falling to Exeter at Sandy Park for the second time in consecutive weeks, this time 40 points to 30 in the Premiership semi-final. My name is Lewis, and I'm delighted to say, for one last time in 2021, I'm joined by my co-host, James. James, how are you?
Yeah, all right, mate. I mean, you know, there's always a little bit of you disappointed. Because you know, you get on the carried away train and you're just hoping it's a one-way ticket. But yeah, I mean, look, it's been an amazing season. I know we'll go into the depths of it in the season review pod, but I think we can be proud of the boys. But there's just that little element of frustration that I know that Axe will really take into next season, because we could have done better.
Is that how you feel then, kind of sat here 48 hours after the fact? Because I think we'd both agree there's no shame in losing to Exeter at Sandy Park, especially in a Premiership semi-final. But is there anything that kind of makes you think, what if?
Yeah, massively. We gave them a 12-point head start at home. You can't do that. You can't do that and expect to win. So I think the element of frustration for me was just that they got out ahead. You knew, and it sort of, I made the game was really over at that point. It wasn't. We did well to keep in touch, but they kept us at, you mentioned it in our WhatsApp group, they kept us at arm's length, just jabbing away. Every time we scored, we conceded within 3-4 minutes straight afterwards, whether it was a try or a penalty. And that just meant we couldn't build any pressure. You know, if we'd managed to get 2 scores in a row, you know, then you would have seen the pressure move back onto them. It never really did. Exeter were never really under pressure. They did enough just to keep their heads above the water. So I think a lot of our fans, looking at Twitter, it was kind of one of those where maybe there was a small element of frustration. And then, you know, you take a step back and there's a lot of pride. There's a lot of pride in what the team has achieved. For me, I'm slightly the other way around. Not that I'm not proud of what the boys have achieved this year. It's been a brilliant year. But that I kind of was very accepting of defeat very quickly, because I wasn't expecting it. And we got to the semi-final. And actually, as the days have moved on, I'm actually quite frustrated, because I don't think the boys delivered the type of performance they've been delivering over the past 2 months.
I think it's a fair point to make. And like you said, it runs counter to a lot of the sentiment at the moment from Sale fans, myself included, which is very, very sort of accepting of the fact that, you know, we got beat for a second time in a row, you know, and the nature of the defeat as well, never really getting within one score with any sort of real threat to Exeter. But there is a sense of, well, actually, on our day, there was a drop-off between how we played the week before, where we were 16 points ahead in the second half, and we kind of let that one slip. Whereas this game very much felt like, as you said, from the beginning, Chiefs kind of rocketed out to a 2-score lead, and they never really relinquished that. If you look at the scoring patterns, it was very much a case of Sale get within 7, and then Chiefs would then get the next point. You know, there's a part in the second half where, you know, Sale pull it back to 30 points to 23, and Chiefs go down the other end of the field and score to make it 37-23. And the longer you leave it in the game, the bigger a deficit that became. And even with Sale pushing towards the end and Dan Dupria's try to again bring it to within 1 score, it just never really felt like we were going to catch them. And I think that's probably off the back of a pretty poor start, which obviously saw Sale concede 12 points within the first 10 minutes. We'll touch upon three-word reviews very briefly, but we need to kind of take a top-line look, I think. And on the day then, James, what do you think was the main reason why Sale ultimately lost this semi-final to the defending champions? Is it as simple as just a fast start from the home side?
Well, there's a reason why they had a fast start, and that's because Tuilagi got himself yellow carded. Probably should have been a red, really. I think if it had been the other way around, I'd have been livid that wasn't a red. There was, I would say, like a 5% mitigating factor that Capstick was leaning into the contact, but probably not significantly more than any ball carrier goes into contact. It was a swinging arm to the head. It should have been a red card. I'm very surprised that he's not been cited as well. And I think that that's where, you know, being Manu Tuilagi and England internationals coming up with the Lions tour has really played into his favour. So I think that that didn't help us. And then I think there was just a lot of inaccuracy, a bit of fast and loose. Panic wasn't the word. It was kind of like, and it wasn't overexcitement either. It was just adrenaline overspill. And we didn't really focus it. Axe talks a lot about really channeling that emotion and how he kind of inherited the very emotional side from Diamond, and about channeling that emotion in the right way and in the moment. And I'd say the moment just got a bit big for us. You know, where the week before, we just caught them cold with our aggression and intensity. We had nothing to lose. This week, the moment just got a bit much for us. But, you know, we haven't been in a semi-final. This group of players has not been in a semi-final. It's still very early in this Alex Anderson era. So that's my view. My view is that, Tuilagi included, that we just made a few of those mistakes. You know, you think about a few of their tries and sort of like a pass that wasn't really very accurate. And a few other things, Simon Hammersley related, that kind of you know, just overawed us on the occasion. It felt like to me anyway. Mm. What about to you?
Well, I think there was two things. I think that kind of inaccuracy of execution was particularly prominent at 9, 10, 12 and 13. That's such a key axis for any team. And obviously we lost Sam James in the warm-up. Van Rensburg comes in at 13, very similar player to Tuilagi. Tuilagi had a very poor game. I don't think there's two ways about it. For somebody who we know is absolutely world-class, he wasn't on his game, and that's fair enough. He's been out for 9 months and only played, 100 minutes of rugby since then. So it's always going to be a big ask. Obviously, you lose AJ McGinty to injury the previous week. So all of a sudden, you know, you don't have your 9 and 10 combo that you've played with for the entirety of the season. You actually don't have your mainstay at 13, who, as a secondary playmaker in that backline, does a lot of good work for Sale and brings the players around him into the game very well. So you had a bit of disruption there, and you could see that, you know, you saw it on O'Flaherty's try. It's as Sale tries to execute these backline moves, you've got players who are a little bit more unfamiliar with each other, running different lines, bit of inaccuracy in terms of which strike lines your outside centre is running versus your inside centre. There's a few elements of that, and that blunted our attack a little bit and obviously led to, you know, possession, territory and counter-attacking opportunities for Chiefs. And then the second is actually something we did very well last week, which was kind of fronting up. And I think Exeter, on the whole, got the better of our forward pack. Now, the margins are quite slim, but what you saw last week, and it's reflected in the fact that they only scored 20 points last week, is that Sale were on the front foot for most of the game up front. They were winning the game line collisions. They were making dominant tackles. And they were doing a very good job of stopping Exeter doing what they do so well, which is score with possession from 5 or 10 metres out. And we just didn't see that on Saturday. Maybe it's some of the injuries in the forward pack. You know, no Akhavander Merva, no Cameron Neal, who both started last week. But it really felt like Exeter just had a very slight advantage there. But because they had the majority of possession, because they had the majority of territory, and because we were kind of giving them the opportunities by not keeping hold of the ball ourselves, they had a lot of opportunities. And that slight advantage ended up being a 12-point advantage, you know, from a couple of tries going over in close early in the first half, for example. And that's kind of where the game starts to slip away. So I think there was, two things that I'd kind of really sort of settled on as being the key reasons, I think.
Yeah, and I think that you mentioned the injuries there, and I think that's right. I think we just sustained too many injuries at once on the run into the end of the season, which, you know, if you get it over a number of games, you can kind of you manage some level of consistency. But it going into a knockout game, without some of these players, the McGinty's, Sam James going down the warm-up, I mean, that's just a nightmare, because Van Rensburg, you know, he can do a job at 13. He's certainly got the pace for it. But Tuilagi and Van Rensburg together, not only is it an issue in attack because, you know, you don't have that extra distributor and it makes it a bit one-dimensional. But also, and especially Tuilagi at 12 means that, you know, let's be honest, his distribution skills aren't the highest quality. You know, but I think it also means that it impacts the kicking game. It also impacts defence as well, because Van Rensburg hasn't had a defender in the 13 channel all that much. But also, they both want to come out and kill people all of the time. So I don't think there was enough control and drift, because we do the rush defence quite nicely. But Sam James does a really good thing where he comes out really quickly and then he turns around and is able to run the corner really, really nicely. Van Rensburg's so committed that, you know, he's kind of out. And look, I think Van Rensburg actually had a really good game for somebody who's been out for so long and had to come into the team last minute. But it would have just disjointed us. And then, it, of course, the knock-on impact is you didn't have Van Rensburg's impact off the bench to give you that further impetus at 55, 60 minutes. So I think you're absolutely right on there. And I think it was a game too far for us. And we talked about it in the selection conversation before last week's game, where we were like, you know, how is it going to roll? And it's easy in hindsight, isn't it? But I do think that it was always going to be quite difficult to have this level of intensity up front that you need to beat Exeter for 160 minutes, of both of games away from home. I think was always going to be a big ask for any side in the world. And Sam, we backed ourselves. And you know what? We just came up a bit short, but not so short that you go, okay, it wasn't worth a pop, or, you know, we're still miles off. We'll never get there. You get a sense that, you know what? If the season had gone a little bit differently and we'd had Exeter at home two games in a row, we might have just snuck it. Yeah, who knows?
Well, and, you know, you don't lose three of your frontline players in the week immediately before a semi-final. You have your star import in the front row, which is in the pack, which is obviously Diaga. You know, we could sit here and play what if for, you know, for hours, but fundamentally, it'd be silly to ignore the fact that Sale did have a lot riding against them, and actually to produce the performance that they did over the last 2 weeks does warrant a lot of pride and a lot of appreciation. And that's something that's coming through in our three-word reviews. So John C, back next year. Phil Bramley, future looks bright. The Mighty Hod, strong learning curve. Nick H, Exeter too good. Oliver Kahn, proud of season. Carl Seed, Hammersley bombed out. There's a few of those. We'll get to that in a bit. And David Davis, roll on September. So fundamentally, everybody feeling very proud, you know, and very sort of pleased with the effort that we've shown and the fight that we took to Exeter. But in terms of that performance on Saturday, James, we obviously have to think a little bit beyond this season. We have to think it in terms of cycles with the playing squad we've got and with where we are in this kind of journey, with the coaching staff, etc. Looking at the difference between Exeter and Sale on the day, a team, you know, in Sale who were on the up and a team in Exeter who were looking to stay atop the mountain, was there anything that immediately stood out to you as kind of the key differences between these two teams in terms of squad composition or game plan execution, etc.?
I think it's just the knockout rugby nous. They know how to get through these games. They know how to control themselves, go through the phases, plays to their strengths as a club, knockout rugby. And that's why them and Saracens have been so successful. And, you know, there wasn't that element of overawe or uncontrolled emotions. So, you know, because I think there were some emotions in the Exeter camp before the game. I think they felt quite hard done by with a couple of their bands. You know, it's a different conversation. The fact is that they did. They obviously used that, but Ewers was a massive loss for them. Do not underestimate that. Capstick is not in the same, you know, level now. You know, lost without Vermeulen as well. They're definitely without a few players and not at their best, Exeter, just generally this season. But they just had enough muscle memory, and literally muscle memory, to get them through the game. So I think that was a big difference. And I thought, you know, Noel, for his, you know, we talk about games back, you know, Noel had hardly played, and bringing in a homegrown player for this. He just really performed. I thought he was just really solid. He was clearly really up for it. So, I mean, it's good to see him back. But, you know, I think the other thing that's just nagging at the back of my mind that I just want to mention as well is just that, you know, how disappointing is it that bloody Quins are in the final? You know, not that they necessarily beat Bristol, but yeah, we got three more wins than them this year. We won three more games, and they were miles off the top two. So it's a bit disappointing to see the fourth place team in with a shout of winning the Premiership. I think it would make a bit of a mockery, because we've had it in the past, haven't we, with Wasps and Leicester. They just get to fourth, but not normally this far back, and so significantly far back. And without recent pedigree as well. I mean, they you know, it's a while since they won the Premiership. So that's just frustrating. So, you know, I hope that the muscle memory for the Chiefs continues into this weekend and they put in another good performance.
Yeah, I mean, kind of goes without saying, but whenever we're looking at this, whichever way we look at this kind of post-match analysis, at least we're not Bristol. Can't really... I mean, that was poor. It's just absolutely horrendous. Couldn't have happened to a nicer coaching staff, of course, but, you know, it's just absolutely horrendous. And, you know, you look at the position Bristol and Sale were in coming into this weekend, and you look at the quality of that Chiefs squad and where Sale are in our cycle, and you say, you know what, fair enough, on the day we were beaten by a better team, and I think that's pretty fair. You look at Bristol and you just think this is, like, abhorrent, you know, to be in the position that they were in and to throw it away is absolutely terrible. And I don't know where you go from there.
It's scarring. That type of experience is scarring. And that sort of question mark they're going to have in the back of their head around their psychological strength is going to really play on them. And of course, they, you know, people like Earl and Malins go back as well to Sarri's. That'll be a blow to them. So, yeah, as you said, couldn't happen to a nicer coaching unit. But, I mean, talk about implosion. And talk about, you know, when we used to talk about the sort of Sale ruining your Christmas because you go to the Christmas game and lose and it just, you know, you'd be thinking, oh, my God, we're going to get relegated and all the rest of it. I mean, could you imagine being the Bristol supporter? Because you've been so much on the beers at halftime. So many beers. So the come down must have been brutal. And I do feel for the fans. I feel for the fans, for sure. Because they were celebrating.
Well, you think as well they've been celebrating for, what, 14 weeks now? I think it's been since round six they've been top of the table, which just adds, you know, more weight to the kind of capitulation that you saw. And that's why I think ultimately we're not seeing that kind of backlash from Sale for obvious reasons, but also because it genuinely feels like we are very much on the up, and this was a first step as part of the next stage of this evolution of the squad of the club, which is obviously to get back here next year, and which obviously our listeners kind of spoken about. So two things on that, actually. We'll go with the kind of negative first, I guess, because a big part of kind of taking that next step and getting this big game experience, etc., is you realise who is ready to make that jump up and which players are going to be here next time that you're in a semi-final or a final. And I think obviously there's a lot of probably unfair criticism being levied at someone like Simon Hammersley, who on the day on Saturday had a pretty testing game, I'd say. I mean, James, you know, when you look at this Sale squad as it is right now, and you look at the players we've got, do you think it's fair to say that 15 kind of stands out as a bit of a weakness when you look at the other clubs in the playoffs and obviously what Sale needs to do to get back here and actually go one better next year?
It's not been our best performing position since Sanderson came in. Hammersley's put in some solid performances, don't get me wrong, in some of the rounds. We've talked about it before, the biggest player for us who hasn't reached the heights under Sanderson that they did under Diamond, which is very, very few players. But Luke James tops the list there, where he's clearly lost a bit of confidence. And the kind of rotation of one game on, one game off, just really hasn't played to Luke James's strengths. Simon Hammersley's performed much better in that scenario, and I think has kind of overperformed slightly on a lot of games since the beginning of February. And I think quite rightly has had the nod for Luke James for this sort of run in games. But I think it's fair to say that even most of the top teams, that, you know, Hammersley is not out the top draw. And it's not just the pace thing. A few of our guys bang on about pace. I know you talk about separation speed. I think that's important, but it doesn't just have to come from fullback, does it? As soon as you put Quirk on the pitch, that changes things. Van Rensburg changes things. So you look at Quinns, you know, we can't, okay, they've put Green at fullback, but for most of the season, they've had Brown or Chisholm. You know, you're not talking about outrageous pace there. So it's about balancing it in the team. So it's not to say that not having a quick fullback. I mean, even Leicester, Freddie Stewart's not quick, but he's the best fullback in the Premiership this year, I'd say. So I just think that for us, it's not going to change. We need to just, you know, just take a step back as fans here. Everyone going, oh, we just need to invest with what money? Wakey, wakey, people. We've got a massive squad on the edge of the cap. So people have to go to create room for a fullback. And we've got people on very long-term contracts. So it's not going to change this year. Hammersley's contract, I know, will be up at the end of next season. So I can't see us investing in a fullback. So here comes the question. Here comes the point of view. And the question will be, what's yours? Because my view is that Luke James should get a run of games. Sanderson should sit down at the beginning of the year and go, you're going to play the first five games of the season. And see how he gets on, basically. I mean, I still think he's a high-quality centre. But, you know, he has played brilliantly for us. It wasn't that long ago we were saying, under Diamond, Luke James was probably the big find, the big differentiating last year and beginning of this season. So I'd just say, right, I'm backing you. First five games of the season, and we see where we are. Because I think his potential is higher than Hammersley. And, you know, if the form doesn't come back or, you know, there's an injury, then Simon Hammersley is a good Premiership fullback. But I do think it could be an area that we could look to invest in or convert someone else into a top quality fullback. And what's your view?
Well, the reason why I brought it up is, you know, all the teams that get to the playoffs are good teams. It's always about where can you get these slight advantages. And a lot of that comes down to, you know, the quality you've got in your squad. And the big choice Exeter made on Saturday was to play Jack Noll at 15 rather than Stuart Hogg. Well, there's two players who could feasibly play 15 for the Lions. It's all about being able, especially the salary cap league, being able to maximise the talent in your squad and obviously find those kind of areas where a bit of versatility or, you know, somebody coming through the academy, etc., makes a big difference, and you can invest in the areas that you need to. You know, I think you look at the sales squad and think, okay, well, what's going to change for next year? You genuinely think 13 out of the 15, you know, could start in a semi-final again next year. But, you know, you look at someone like Hammersley and you think, you know, maybe him, maybe Kearney Eustazen, you know, maybe they're not just quite that top quality. And I think actually this is going to be the biggest question of Sanderson's reign coming into in summer. So what do you do about that 15 position? Because like you said, James, we're at the cap, you know. I don't know why Premiership Rugby doesn't publish, you know, cap figures, but Sale, you know, as far as we're aware, are basically touching the, you know, the cap. As you expect, given the fact that we've got England internationals and Lions internationals and Springboks and all the rest of it. So the big question into next season is, when you get back to a Premiership semi-final next season, all being well, who's going to be your 15? I think the answer probably is Luke James. And you go with the fact that his floor is probably higher than Hammersley's and his ceiling is probably higher than Hammersley's as well. And you've got a really, really dependable 15 with a massive boot on him. But there's also the question about, well, do you look at someone like Kieran Wilkinson, who we'll touch upon in a minute, or Tom Curtis, who could potentially slot in at 15 as well? The jury's out on that, and we'll have to see what happens. But I think, you know, when we look at, okay, what happened on Saturday, what happens for next season, the bulk of the squad is there. The bulk of the starting 15 is there. It's just these one or two positions where there might be changes. And I think, you know, Hammersley, as Saturday probably showed, is maybe someone who isn't guaranteed to be in that starting 15. So, you know, I think it's a big call to make. It'll be one of the storylines to watch going into next season. But as I said earlier, you know, we'll start with a negative and finish on a positive. And I think this one is a massive positive. Obviously, James, in a Premiership semi-final, after 55 minutes, you know, the bench empties and who comes on? It's Ewan Ashman, it's James Harper, it's Rafi Quirk, Kieran Wilkinson. So just there alone, I've named four academy graduates. most of whom are under the age of 21. I think Wilkinson is the oldest at 23. All players who are starting their Premiership careers with Sale and getting meaningful minutes. I mean, even in defeat, how good was it to see, you know, by the end of the game, the fact that nearly half or over half of our players on the pitch were people from the Northwest or academy graduates?
I think it's really important because, you know, we have a very heavy South African contingent, and it's really important to keep that balance within the squad and remind ourselves what we're fighting for. Because I've said to you before, especially in games like this, you get players overperforming for the love of the jersey. I mean, just look at Cam Neill's performance, you know, second to last game of the normal season. Just like superhuman, you know, we know he's, you know, grafter, all the rest of it, but took his performance to a whole new level that we weren't sure he had, you know, like potentially international sort of level performance that was. So, you know, you see these other guys come on, like James Harper's, the Quirks. These people are fans first. And that's why, you know, they're really important to us because they really care. And they've been to, you know, a lot of these guy lads would have grown up supporting us when we're in the doldrums. So they you know, they really, you know, some of them won't even remember 2006. You know, probably you weren't even around, although toddlers or something. So, you know, it's a bit depressing thinking about that from my point of view. But, you know, it was brilliant to see. And also take the fight to Exeter. I thought they made a difference when they came on with their energy. Kieran Wilkinson offered a different type of threat at 10 that we don't, that McGinty and Rob Dupree don't have, which is he has pace. And if he takes the ball to the line, they've got to be sure to tackle him, because otherwise he's through, and he's got the ability to sidestep a fullback as well. You know, we don't, you know, McGinty takes the ball to the line, but he, you know, he's still reliant on that outrageous dummy to really get him through the gap. Whereas Wilkinson can break a tackle through the pace. You know, look, we haven't tested his goal kicking ability, or, you know, it wasn't a gimme, the one the conversion that he got, you know, under that amount of pressure to get us back in the game. But I think he showed there was a lot of, because we talked on the pod last week about, well, he'll pick Wilkinson on the bench because he's the next person on the squad. He trusts the squad, and we've got to have a recognised goal kicker. It's not like Diamond, you know, and Sam James hadn't played 10 all year. So you can't just drop him straight in from nowhere to play 10 in a knockout. So I was very confident that Wilkinson would be playing. But on Twitter, it was very split. Most said, you know, you wouldn't be risking Wilkinson in a semi-final. I don't think anybody thinks that now. I think, you know, going into next season, people actually want to see him have a go. And at 23, let's be honest, if he doesn't start getting given that opportunity to have a run of games, the time's going to start getting away from him. And we've got Tom Curtis underneath that as well, who really acquitted himself well last season. And I think, going back to the 15 question, he's the better fit out of the two of them. I think Tom Curtis having a go at 15 could be a really interesting thing. Don't forget we've got Elliot Gourlay as well, who's actually playing in the centre for Scotland in the 20s at the moment, but, you know, does have pedigree at fullback. So anyway, I digress. So yeah, brilliant. Harper, I thought, acquitted himself well. Ashman put in a massive hit. It was just bloody brilliant to see, basically, and I loved every second of it.
Absolutely. Well, I think that feeling of optimism that's obviously going to permeate through the summer and into next year is probably a good way to end the season on, and brings us very neatly to our next main topic to discuss, which is obviously the upcoming summer international series and a little bit of Sale news. So as most of you will obviously be aware by now, Sale will have four members in the England squad as part of the summer test series against the USA and Canada. And coincidentally, three out of the four are academy graduates. So Bevan Rodd, Curtis Langdon, Ben Curry and Manu Tuilagi were all picked by Eddie Jones on Sunday afternoon as part of that England squad. And James, obviously, this is a very specific set of circumstances for the England squad. You know, they're without the Lions, they're without a lot of their sort of frontline internationals who are given the opportunity to rest. It's obviously a home tour this summer. Games are being played at Twickenham, and obviously it's tier two opposition in the US and Canada. But, you know, what were your thoughts on the four that were selected to represent England this summer? Any surprises or anyone who you think is particularly deserving of wearing the red rose?
Well, you know, I think Langdon probably felt a long, long way off at the beginning of this season to be picked for England. And actually spent the majority of the Sanderson era as second choice. Shockingly so, really. I think his match performance is at least equal Acker's. Acker still's got that little bit of extra X factor. But don't underestimate Langdon as well. He scored that really great try off the back. He's got good feet. He can be a pest over the ball as well. He can compete for over the ball. And he works really hard in sort of around the ruck defence as well. So I think he's a well-rounded player, basically. And with the throwing being a lot stronger, it's brought him into contention. Because actually, you're without Cowan Dickey and Jamie George away with the Lions. So, you know, next in line, you've got sort of, you know, Dunn really. He was probably third choice before that. But there's not a lot rocking around. They've called up Will Capon from Bristol, who's second or third choice at Bristol, really. So why not Curtis Langdon? I mean, it's got to that situation. You know, if they hadn't have picked him and they picked someone else, you would have thought, okay, well, fair enough. But okay, maybe they just think that Curtis Langdon's still only 23. You know, this is a lad who's, you know, he's going to be 25 at the next World Cup, 29 at the one after, at his peak. So why not have a look at him now? I think a lot of people got overexcited by Ashman. I think he's obviously a terrific player with a very high ceiling, don't get me wrong. And we're very lucky to have him. But, I mean, he's only started maybe two Premiership games. Curtis Langdon now is a proven Premiership performer and has a level of consistency that we just know about and Eddie Jones now can invest in. So I think that that's a good thing for him. Manu Tuilagi, I think, was a bit of a surprise in a sense that it's going to probably hold back somebody else getting an opportunity. But, you know, if he is going to get called up to the Lions tour, we do need him to play these early England games. So that's a good thing for the Lions that he's going to play. And then after that, Ben Curry, if he hadn't have been selected, I mean, you know, that would have been just outrageous, really. You know, there's just, I know he's been injured for a lot since the new year, but his performances since he's come back have been, he's put on that extra little bit of weight and muscle, which has now got him close to Tom. Like, he should be first choice at seven for England, no question. Or six if you're going to play Underhill as well and play all the Curry Underhill thing. And then, who have I missed?
Bevan Rod.
Yeah, Bevan Rod had a brilliant season. Brilliant season. He just, unfortunately, came up against Exeter and got battered last week. And Sanderson's obviously made a difficult call not to select him. Does that mean he's ready for international rugby? I mean, I don't care, because what he's going to get out of the camp going away for international, it'll accelerate his learning really, really quickly. And he's a dynamic player on hard summer pitches against like USA, people like that, where he doesn't need to be quite as on it with the scrummaging. He can really excel around the park, get a name for himself, really. So well done to all four of them. They all really deserve it. And, you know, we can all be really proud, especially three academy graduates, as you said.
Yeah, I think I don't really have much to add to that, to be honest. I think the Bevan Rod selection, there is an element of real politic in it, in that I think he is eligible for both England and Scotland. And as we saw with Ewan Ashman a little bit earlier this year, there are decisions that these players need to make. And even if Bevan Rod isn't in Eddie Jones's plans for the next World Cup cycle, for example, there is an incentive for England to cap him now and get him involved and kind of show that there's a pathway forward there. Not to say that I don't I think Bevan Rod isn't deserving, because I think actually he's exactly the sort of player you want to be having exposure in the England squad now. But yeah, there is that was less of a surprise, because there is a real incentive for England to kind of cap him. And actually, of the positions, loosehead prop is one of the few where you still got a frontline player in Ellis Genge who's likely to play as part of the summer series. And obviously, as well, there's some real prospects coming through at Leicester and Exeter in those positions as well. But apart from that, I mean, obviously, Ben Curry was a shoo-in. Manu Tuilagi, you know, for obvious reasons. And then Curtis Langdon, as I said on Twitter, that was a surprise, just because it's kind of come a little bit out of left field. But he's been probably our most consistent hooker this year. I think he's been our best hooker. I think his ability to pilot the back of the ball is better than Acker's. I think his throwing in is better than Acker's. I think the difference between them now, in terms of who goes in at the starting number two jersey, is, you know, your preference on playing style. Genuinely, I think, you know, they're probably at an equal ability level. And I think London has made massive strides over the last couple of years. So congratulations to him and congratulations to all of them. And I think, again, it's a testament to where this club is going, that you've got four players with England, you've got a player with the Lions. And again, you know, there's probably a few more on the radar, you know, playing at the under-20 level and elsewhere. And then finally, just to round things off, another one of Sale's Academy graduates, another English qualified player, won't be involved in the summer series against USA and Canada, but he will be involved with Sale for the next 2 years at least, and that's Cameron Neild, who it was announced today, Monday afternoon, has re-signed with the Sharks on a two-year extension. So we had Cameron Neild down as being under contract with Sale until the 21-22 season. That's per our contract tracker, available to our Patreon subscribers. But this announcement and the fact that it's a two-year extension probably indicates that, reading between the lines, there was a bit of a decision to be made on Cameron Neild. You know, he wasn't necessarily playing loads under Steve Diamond. He's found his way back into the first team squad under Alex Sanderson. And actually a decision has been made to say, this is a player that we want to keep around for the next couple of years and is going to be getting first team minutes. Because, James, you say it every week, it seems like, at the moment, but he was a player who 4 or 5 years ago was our player of the season, and then he fell off the face of the earth through injury and form and not really getting a look in. So how big do you think it is, in terms of a show of faith, that Axe has made the decision to lock down Cameron Neild for another couple of seasons beyond this one?
I mean, when you think about Sanderson, the type of coach he is and how he approaches the game, especially from the psychological side of things, you just knew that the Cam Neild thing, if he could stay fit, would be a perfect match, because they're just he's exactly the sort of player that he really appreciates. But equally, he's the type of coach that Cam Neild really needs. I think he's been through the mill a bit in terms of trying to make it a hooker, having a bad game, then, you know, getting injuries, just as, you know, it was sort of his turn to rotate in because other people had got injured and then he would be injured. So he kept missing out on the opportunity to get on the pitch to prove himself. And he strikes me as somebody who's probably been getting quite frustrated. Maybe he hasn't been making brilliant choices off the field, etc. But we were forced to give him game time in the restart last season because it was like two games a week. And he just came flying out of the box and was brilliant every single week. And then at the beginning of this season, you know, Diamond was, you know, was picking him on the bench and stuff, but, you know, not so much. And, you know, we were saying, even when Sanderson started, you know, why isn't Cam Neild starting? Especially when we're without Ben Curry and Tom Curry. I mean, it was just, I mean, he's not seven, but he could do a better job there than anyone else in the squad. And, you know, it was like, where the hell is he and why isn't he starting? And then it got to just a situation where it was just getting silly. And then he finally got a couple of starts towards the end of the season and then got the nod to start in that away game at Exeter. He cruelly got a bad injury. It sounds like he's going to be back early to mid-September. So he's going to miss a lot of pre-season, so we might not sort of see him until October. But like, when you speak to him with his interviews and stuff, this is a lad who bleeds the club. And he is repeating back as well. I think he believes it himself, but Sanderson has given him license to let it just ooze out of every pore of his body. And, you know, we are bloody lucky to have someone like him at the club. I think the reason why the extension is not longer is probably because of his injury track record over the last 3 or 4 years, which has been pretty horrific. And he's just got injured again as well. So I do think there's still a question mark over his ability to stay fit. Because if he was fit all games, all season, I mean, there wouldn't be a better squad player in the Premiership, in my view, and on current form deserves to be starting, even with all our superstars, and certainly ahead of Jono. So I think it's just great. I mean, what's your view on Cam Neild and the role that he'll play in the squad moving into next season and the season after?
Well, I think he's the sort of player that you build squads around. Not necessarily someone you build a team around. He's not a De Klerk or a Dan De Pria, etc. But he's the epitome, like you said, of a squad player. And not just a squad player for the Premiership, but for a top four team. Because you look at his aging curve. He's 26. He doesn't actually hasn't actually played that much rugby relative to other people. He's got a lot of rugby left in him if he can stay healthy. But you look at the upturn in performances that we're seeing throughout the last sort of calendar year, and obviously this season as well. And he's exactly the sort of player that John O'Ross was 4 or 5 years ago. And the reason why John O'Ross endeared himself so much to South fans is, you know, he'd hit every ruck and he'd make every tackle and he'd, you know, do X, Y, Z. And you need players like that, you know, who can lead from the front and lead by example. And I don't think Cam Neill's ever going to be an on-field leader. I think you're starting already to see that shift more towards the Currys. But he's exactly the sort of player that you need to supplement or rotate in with a Ben Curry or a Dan De Pria or whomever else. So I think the ceiling is always going to be limited with Cam Neill. I don't see him as somebody who's ever going to play for England. I don't think the sort of full skill set is there. But if you're looking for the model at which you want to have a player to supplement your star players and to do all the dirty work and clear out of the rocks and make the tackles, and show a little bit of high-end skill as well to bring others into the game, Cam Neill is exactly the sort of person you're looking for. And I mean this in the nicest way possible. You know, you look at Jackson Ray at Saracens, you look at Yanis Kirsten at Exeter. All these top teams in the last decade have had that kind of almost enforcer role, somebody who is not asked to do what Tom Curry is increasingly asked to do and play the ball and pass out the back and all that kind of stuff. You just need someone who can really kind of hold the line and let your star players have the room and the opportunities to be the star players they are. And that's no disrespect to Cam Neill, because I think it's a role. And I think when you can find people like Cam Neill who bleed for the club, as you said, James, but who also have the ability to play that role and actually go beyond that role when they need to, I think is exactly the sort of player that we need to be building the squad around for the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 years. And I also think as well, let's not forget John O'Ross is going into his age 31 season next season. You know, he's played a lot of rugby over the last 5 years in particular. In 2 years' time, he's going to be 33 and might be thinking about moving back to the farm in South Africa. Well, you've got a ready-made replacement for him in Cameron Neill, and potentially someone who might end up being a slightly better player when all is said and done. So I think it's a fantastic signing. I think the only other thing is ultimately what game time he gets over the next 2 years, because if he stays fit, he's exactly the sort of player who, if he's not getting game time at Sale, could ultimately look elsewhere and join 9, 10 of the other Premiership clubs that immediately go into their starting 15. So I think there's probably an element of player benefit to the player as well there. But even with the Dupriers, even with the Currys, there's always going to be roles for players like Cameron Neill, especially when they do their job quite as well as Cameron Neill does.
Yeah, I think that's right. And Jackson Ray is a classic person who plays every game of the season. Plays every single game. Doesn't actually take a break. And then sometimes he misses out on the sort of the knockout selection. What I loved about that, Sanderson's best selection of the season was picking Cam Neill at 6. We only saw him for 6 minutes and then he got carried off. But that for me was the best selection that Sanderson's done, because he has said, I'm going to pick the people who are on form. And Cam Neill's form was better than the others. So he got in ahead of Ben Curry and ahead of John O'Ross returning as well. And I think that was just... And ahead of playing Jean-Luc at 6 and someone else in the second row. And it just made the statement. And what I love about Cam Neill is, you know, he's going to be loving it on the training paddock. He can't wait to get back out there when he can. And when he's putting in the level of performances he is, that is going to force the Jean-Lucs, the Dan Dupriers, the John O'Rosses, the Tom Currys to keep their levels very, very high. And Sanderson's also sent the signal that if they don't, yeah, or they're not as high as Cam Neill's getting picked, even in the biggest game of the season so far. And that is where things have transformed for Sale, you know, to be able to be in that position, but also have a coach willing to do it, because he was putting in those performances at the end of last season, and Dimes, when it still push came to shove, Jono Ross was backing at six, and Cam Neill should have probably been starting. So, you know, that I just love that whole thing, and this is a brilliant story. Fingers crossed he can stay fit now and be a key player for us next season.
Absolutely. Well, that's the pod for this week and ultimately for this season. So, first of all, we want to say a massive thank you, obviously, to everyone who stuck with us for another season. I think we're coming up to our fourth consecutive year of doing the podcast. Sorry, fourth consecutive season of doing the podcast. Now we'll be into our fifth year next year. So thank you to everyone who stuck with us since 2017. And obviously, thank you to everyone who's joined us along the way as part of this season. Obviously, our journey is following sales a little bit, and we've been able to do some knockout rugby podcasts for the first time ever. You know, so that's been a lot of fun for this year. You've managed to get a bonus episode out of the season as well. But massive thank you, obviously, to our listeners, to our Twitter followers, to everyone who engages with us, all our followers who also support us on Patreon. We really appreciate it as well. And we can't say a massive thank you enough to everyone who's made doing the podcast each week for the last however many weeks it's been this season. Such a blast. That said, you know, we're not packing things up and finishing for the summer. As James mentioned earlier, we'll do the end of season review in the next couple of weeks, where we'll take a much bigger look at the season that was and talk through the bigger storylines and hand out some end of season awards. And obviously now we have a Patreon as well, where we release bonus content and bonus podcasts. So there's a couple of exciting things in the pipeline from a sell perspective, including the long-awaited Academy review, where James is going to rule the roost over sales prospects. We've already mentioned a couple of them in this week's pod, but there's some really good insights coming up in terms of who you should be looking out for next season and beyond. Obviously, it's the Lions series this year, so there'll be plenty of talk as well about the Lions and how they're performing in South Africa. We've done podcasts already on the Patreon around the Lions squad that's announced. We've also done one on the Springbok squad as well, which was a lot of fun, and so there'll be a few more bits and pieces like that. And obviously, the summer allows us to stretch our creative wings a little bit and do some more fun stuff about just being a fan of the club and, you know, talking about some of our favourite players or our least favourite players, or just having a little bit of fun and rather than just talking about the kind of day-to-day. But that stuff's all coming over the next couple of weeks and months. Coming this week will be analysis on the Cameron Neill re-signing as well, which will also be dropping on the Patreon. That's as part of our written series talking about and analysing each coming and going from the sales squad for this year as well. So I think that just about covers it off, James. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention as part of our final episode of the season?
Yeah, I would like to thank you, Lewis. I'd like to thank you. The listeners won't know, but Lewis does the vast majority of the legwork in regards to the pod, the editing, getting all the technology right, and also prepping enough to be able to ask us, on the most part, intelligent questions that me and Alex can just rock up and answer. Obviously, I just prat about a bit on Twitter and do game reviews, but this podcast would not happen without Lewis. So a big thank you to you as well, mate.
Oh, you'll make me cry to finish the season, but I appreciate that. And well, like I said, we're nothing obviously without people tuning in each week to listen. Otherwise, we're just three blokes on Skype just chatting away. So thank you again to all our listeners. We hope you've enjoyed the podcast this season, and we'll be chatting to you very soon for our end of season review pod.